sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Lockdown Cubs, part of the Lockdown Network, your team every day. I am one of your hosts, Sean Sears. Joining me, of course, is my co-host, Ryan Davis, who is in sunny Florida right now. Ryan, how is the beach? And I'm sure you're having like coconuts brought up to you on the side, right? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's about the summation of the situation. Yeah, I'm in my Florida getaway for the month of February, just enjoying myself.
How luxurious. Here in Chicago, it's pretty cold. It snowed yesterday. But Cubs baseball has officially kind of started. Spring training is underway now officially, as I believe all position players were supposedly supposed to report by Sunday. Of course, it is
except
Tuesday.
For one.
Yeah, one.
More on that later.
We'll talk about it. So in the first segment, we'll kind of recap, of course, spring training, some of the bigger storylines that came out as players reported and whatnot. In that second segment, we're going to talk about that player who has named yet to be named, player to be named later, everyone's favorite player. In that second segment, we'll talk about who that player is that is yet to report to spring training and what that could mean for another guy that the Cubs maybe might be interested in, as well as Tom Ricketts mentioning there is no money to spend for the Cubs. So we'll kind of debunk all that shenanigans.
Apparently that's the second player that has yet to report to spring training. Cash considerations.
It's everyone's second favorite player. Maybe first, depending on what league you're talking about here. And then the third and final segment, we'll kind of hit on some Cubs bolts and wrap up the show here as we enter the first episode of season two officially for Locked On Cubs. Exciting times.
Yeah, please clap.
Yeah, we hold for applause. But let's jump into this first segment. Of course, spring training underway. There's been a ton of storylines. The biggest one that's come out so far has been this Addison Russell story. Ryan, I don't know if you listened to the audio from the interview itself that he did. Russell spoke for the first time since he's been, obviously, the allegations came out for a second time last year, as well as his domestic violence suspension. Was speaking in front of people, and it just mixed reviews, but putting it nicely. It just didn't seem like people believed Addison Russell.
Yeah, and it was going on right as I was preparing to fly down to Florida. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see it. I didn't hear it. I read about it, and I read a lot of the quotes. I talked to media people who were there, mm-hmm. and it just seems like nobody really buys him. Well, I that's unfair. I think there is at least one media person who kind of bought into what Russell was doing, and that's fine for that person. But it just seems like nobody else really bought it. And it came off as scripted and disingenuous, or at least not willing to accept responsibility for the details of the situation. Just kind of a very vague accepting of responsibility for having done something wrong, but not specifically owning up to anything, really. It just kind of read off as, here's my five talking points and I'm gonna stick to those and not really go off script. And yeah, that's just not good enough.
Right. I think the one quote that stuck with me was him kind of not denying the allegation anymore. He said, "I want to own my actions. I want to be accountable for the hurt that I put Melissa through and the pain that she went through. That's what I want to own." But it's worthy here. Now, of course, that quote sounds, for the most part, I guess, honorable. Like, it sounds like Russell might be trying to do the right thing. Looking at him saying that, though, It was more of his body language. And I talked about this in Tony Andracki a little bit because he was there talking with him, obviously, in spring training. This was happening. And Tony says, like, when Russell talks, he gets this smirk on his face. And I've seen it, too, in interviews. Yeah. And it looked like he was being kind of almost condescending or, like, you know, like people could have taken it that way. But it's just Addison Russell being nervous. And I think more than anything, he didn't know what to say. So he just kept, you know, kind of putting out the blanket statements of like, he's sorry and he wants to be better. And, you know, it's hard to really take him at face value, just with what's been going on and kind of what led up to these events. But on top of that, like just the way he seemed, like his whole demeanor just felt like it was kind of like, I have to do this so I can play shortstop again. And right. less about like, I wish I had been a better person in these moments and I'm working harder to be that. It was kind of like, this is step three of step seven of me playing for the Chicago Cubs, you know?
Right. And it really, unfortunately, it jives with what I've heard about Melissa and what she believes about his path forward. And really that is, you know, obviously, you know, people can be skeptical of how she feels about him if they want to, but you know, this is a person that it's in her best interest to root for him to actually make change and be a better person. So that's something she wants. She wants him to be a better person. But at the same time, I know that she has said she thinks he's just going to continue trying to manipulate people because that's what he's good at doing. She's said that she's seen him manipulate therapists, you know, that she thinks that he's probably just going to continue manipulating people. And that's what that having that knowledge in the first place.
Right.
That's what I read in those quotes and heard from other people was that it just looked like he was, like you said, going through those motions, attempting to manipulate people. And, you know, the way it came through, I think if you really are paying attention and you know the history and the kind of person this guy has been, you see through it. But what the Cubs, I think, unfortunately, and Russell and his people were really hoping for were what you said. When you read those quotes out loud, they sound like he's saying the right things. Mm. And that's what they wanted. They wanted the quotable moments. They wanted to be able to point back to the quotes years from now or months from now or weeks from now and say, well, here's him saying all the right things. He was following all the right actions like we wanted him to. Here's him being contrite. And so they're essentially getting what they wanted out of it, which is disappointing because it doesn't sound like they're really holding him to a high level of accountability. Right. All they're asking him to do is go through the motions and make it look like he's doing what they want him to.
It's also worth noting that the same defense for Addison Russell is the same defense team that helped represent Stephen Avery in season two of Making a Murder.
Really?
Yeah. That's,
I don't have anything to read into that. I just find that fascinating.
Yeah. It's one of my friend's dads is actually an attorney for the firm. He actually headed up the Addison Russell case. So there's a lot of details that weren't shared. I'm not going to share, but yeah,
right,
it was interesting seeing his partner on Making a Murder season two. I was like, oh, I just met this person at my friend's engagement party like last December, and now they're buying a car that was owned by Stephen Avery.
Are you talking about the lady with the black hair?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. She's so interesting. I follow her on Twitter.
Yeah. She's kind of crazy, but yeah.
Yeah. She, like the way she tweets is kind of, I don't know, reminiscent of a very famous politician / businessman who files bankruptcy a lot, if that's descriptive enough.
Rod Blagojevich. Anyways, yeah, so I mean it's interesting. You can see the parallels with how Russell's I guess team is managing the situation compared to like how some things are handled in politics or whatnot. I don't want to get any political or whatnot, but saying right. enough is sometimes exactly what you need to say. So we can jump on to a more exciting topic. Yu Darvish healthy. As we've heard before, we talked about it a little bit on the last podcast. It was announced that, you know, as far as everything was seeming, you know, Yu Darvish should be ready to go for spring training. It looks like he is. He spoke a little bit last week and this week as well without an interpreter. He's making an effort to do that without his interpreter. I don't know if that means much, but I can definitely feel, you know, there are some people legitimately forgot Yu Darvish was on this team. I don't know how, because, you know, if you weren't talking about how bad he was, you were talking about how much it sucked he wasn't pitching. But there are some people that just kind of forgot the guy even existed. So, and I think it's good, kudos to him to make an effort to kind of like at least be a presence on this Cubs team. Hopefully he can stick around and do that more than just talking. But I'm encouraged at least to see him make an effort. Does this mean anything to you, Ryan? You're just kind of like, meh.
Yeah, I mean, Harper, he is such a big part of this team. I think that can't be overstated, how a healthy Yu Darvish is a huge difference for this team. There's a reason they signed him to a six-year deal worth whatever it was, $129 million, I think. It wasn't about one season, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I think it is important that he's healthy and pitching like he can. It makes a big difference to have him out there versus, let's say, Tyler Chatwood or Mike Montgomery or whoever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, having him, that's a guy you're hoping to essentially be your second or third best starter behind maybe Kyle Hendricks and maybe behind Cole Hamels, but I think realistically you're hoping he's better than Hamels this year. So yeah, that's a guy you would expect to be at least in your top three, and he does make a huge difference. And there's another guy that I think would make a huge difference to be good again, and that's Jose Quintana. I know we didn't prep on this necessarily, mm-hmm. but I wrote something at Bet Chicago last year about Quintana and how much better he's been when he uses this changeup more. And it sounds like he's been working on the game planning his changeup a bit more going into 2019. And that's really exciting. You know, the idea of him being more pre-2017 Quintana and less, you know, Cubs Quintana, I guess.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's a huge piece that comes back. And like you were talking about, I know I think it was Tony and Jackie actually talked about it, and I saw you guys interacting on Twitter about this as well. His changeup was huge. And I know we did a whole episode about it last year talking about how it was strange he just kind of ignored that. But his changeup was incredibly effective when he used it. I don't know if he just lost command of it, didn't feel as comfortable, whatever it is. But yeah, if he can get that pitch working, that suddenly makes Quintana's kind of almost too straight fastball look it's a little more deceptive, and then it makes his curveball work better. So, I mean, just having that third pitch that's, you know, reliable at the very least makes people think, and that makes you more dangerous. So that's huge. It also was announced that apparently Tyler Chatwood thinks he's found the remedy to his erratic command. This is kind of me pulling a quick few words here from Sahadev Sharma's article at The Athletic. If you haven't read it yet, take a look at it. He includes some GIFs and some demonstrations of Chatwood kind of throwing a little bit differently when he came to the Cubs. He was talking more about, it was a glove tap that he used to do before coming to the Cubs this year, and he kind of eliminated it throughout the season last year, but he was still kind of pushing his hand to tap to nothing, and it was throwing off his timing. And he himself even admits that he doesn't, you know, think it's the be-all, end-all of what his issues were last year. But getting him more comfortable and feeling like he can, you know, be the guy he once was and just being you just have to feel like you can be yourself on the mound. And hopefully that's how he feels coming into 2019, and maybe that kind of restores things. I'm skeptical, but that being said, there's no way Tyler Chatwood's as bad as he was last year. Like, it's impossible.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, enough times, but mm-hmm. my kind of working hypothesis is, you know, just looking at it realistically, there's no way that he comes back and is that same guy. He has such a body of work being so much better than that.
Right.
And, when you walk that many guys, more walks than strikeouts, more walks than hits allowed, there's obviously something broken there. And it just seems like all signs point to he has to have figured something out to fix it. There has to be at least a better season in store for him, barring some sort of weird injury or some other sort of fluke. So, yeah, I think that good for him. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything's fixed and he's going to be great again. I don't know if he ever was great, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be anything special. But he has to be better than what it was last year. And if it is, then, you know, that's another reason to have optimism for him going into 2019 and for the rotation. Going back to Quintana for a moment, I pulled up what I wrote about him and his changeup last year. This was in the middle of the season, obviously, so the numbers aren't totally up to date. It was published on August 23rd, but at that moment in time, in 17 starts, in 91 and a third innings, when he threw his changeup less than 9% of the time, he had a 5.72 ERA. At that time, if he in games in which he threw the changeup 9% or more, it was 7 starts, 38 and 2/3 innings, 1.40 ERA. And the difference was between 7.4 strikeouts per 9 and then 9.1 strikeouts per 9. So the strikeouts went up, the ERA went down, the walks per 9 went down. I mean, it was a major change. No pun intended.
I caught that pun there last second. It's a huge difference. If Quintana can get that other pitch going in, it makes everything more effective. Just, basically looking at the situation like that. So hope for the best. If Quintana can even just improve on his season last year or even just be consistent, that's a huge upgrade to this rotation. So one quick note here before we jump into the second segment. I don't know if you saw this. Did you see Brad Brock's comments about free agency?
Yeah, and I saw other guys making comments too. It's like every player in Major League Baseball is on like some sort of text log together, some group text where they all agreed to just go ahead and trash Major League Baseball and free agency and basically prepare the average fan for the fact that a strike is on the way.
Right. That's the sense I got from it. Brock basically has been saying what most people have. He said he had about 7 offers from one team or from 7 offers from 7 different teams, obviously all saying roughly about the same thing, same offer price, same years. And they all kind of came at once. He said it was a very surreal moment, and it kind of verified a lot of theories that I think most of people that are involved with it, as much as you and I are, had. And that's that. Whether Major League Baseball is actively colluding or not, they're all kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Let's all agree. Like, this is the cap we're spending on XYZ. And they're all saying there's these algorithms and projections or whatnot. And I'm sure there are, but how actively they're following to those, or how, much they're looking at them as a sense where, like, this player could be this good, or this player is going to cost us this much to be this good, is kind of where it's at. And that's their job. It's tough to argue that, but obviously the players are at an extreme disadvantage at this point. So.
Yeah. And yeah, I've always been the last person to throw out the collusion word, just because it's such a high standard, and we've had collusion
in the past.
It has happened before, and there's so much involved in that I don't throw that word out lightly. But I think at the very least, we do have some sort of level of acknowledgement that things have been changed, that this isn't the same. It's not that this happened naturally. This wasn't an organic process that got us here. There has been some sort of tinkering on one side of the aisle that has decided that they're going to change the way this all works. And part of it has been analytics, where, a lot of these people, and this was a point I saw made by a writer on Twitter, where people try to point to, well, this is what the smarty pants analytics guys of 20 years ago were working on, and this is what everybody wanted, right? And well, now the people who write, to do analytics and do all that kind of stuff, it's not the same people. A lot of those people got front office jobs and moved into these roles. And why did they do that? Well, it's because owners saw people who are actively finding ways to not pay players and still win games. And, that's where we're headed as a league. Is you see comments about from Rob Manfred and from Tom Ricketts even talking about that there's not necessarily a correlation between spending and winning anymore. And, that's what the owners want. They want to find a way to win without spending money.
Yeah. That's 100% what it is. I mean, if you can, it's just being as efficient as possible. And as we've seen, every baseball team now has adopted an analytics team, and it's expanded to, 20, 30 people for some teams. But it's just the way baseball's going. They're so data heavy. It's hard for teams and ownerships to not be like, well, hey, if this is going to work, they're taking every resource and outlet that they can and seeing if it can squeeze out money is essentially what's happening. And
right.
It's hard to fault them. That's their job. And if they do it effectively enough, you win World Series. But, we're looking at kind of like the backlash of it, the negatives to it. And it's the players that are going to suffer ultimately. And that sucks. Cut and dry.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. And what's going to happen is we're going to have this kind of cyclical thing where Everybody is a smarty pants and thinks they figured out that you don't need to spend money to win. And all the teams are going to be doing that. And all it's going to take is one or two teams that decide, you know, we're going to fall on the other aisle of it. And it was always the Yankees, you know, 20 years ago, it was the Yankees that were the one that decided to outsmart everybody by spending the money and outspending to bring in the good free agents and load up their team that way. And everybody hated them for it. And the Red Sox were doing it too back then. That all it's going to take is one or two teams to decide, yeah, we're going to go ahead and spend the money and we're going to, you know, maybe not give everybody $300 million. But, you know, if everyone's offering a quality reliever like Brad Brock 1 year, $3 million, maybe we offer him 1 year, $6 million. And we'll go out and get those guys who fill the marginal roles on your roster and we'll go get those quality guys that way. It will change and it's a cyclical process, so it'll turn around at some point. It's just for now, it seems very clear that the majority of the league has decided that they don't want to pay for players anymore.
Pinch and pennies, never fun, at least for us, at least. Let's jump into the second segment here, where we'll kind of talk about that player that didn't show up to camp quite yet, as well as Tom Ricketts claiming his wallet is empty. More here on Locked On Cubs.
Cash considerations, not there.
Stick around. What's going on, Cubs fans? This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for your baseball fans. 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, 75-degree temperatures. Man, that sounds so nice being freezing in Chicago. All stadiums are in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles. Family-friendly resorts, hotels, which offer plenty of fun for kids of all ages, from water parks to horseback rides to games and activities. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Once again, that is visitarizona.com/springtraining. Only a couple days away before spring training kicks off here officially. Pitchers and catchers report Tuesday for the Cubs. Plan your event now at, once again, visitarizona.com/springtraining. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs here in the second segment. We're going to be talking about a particular player that didn't show up to spring training quite yet. He was excused by the team. It was none other than 38-year-old veteran Ben Zobrist. Apparently, from what his what the Cubs have come out and said, that Ben Zobrist has been excused from these first day or two of spring training simply just because of personal reasons. That's kind of all the reason we got, but there's kind of a working theory behind all that, and I'm going to kind of let Ryan take the lead on this and explain that here, Ryan. So kind of give us an idea of what Ben Zobrist has to do with anything that's going on outside of playing baseball.
Yeah, so there are some theories, and this isn't us necessarily breaking news. I've talked to Evan Altman of Cubs Insider. He's said some things privately and then some things publicly. Basically, the public thing that he's put out there is that he's kind of heard that maybe the Cubs are looking to deal Ben Zobrist and have told him, possibly told him to stay home for that reason. And that the idea is that if they can move him, they could go after a free agent, not the one that you probably think. The theory, the working theory, is that they're talking to Craig Kimbrell and that the Cubs are interested in signing him. Again, this is all speculation and I don't want to put too many words in Evan's mouth because I'm not looking at exactly what he put out there, but that's kind of the gist that I got. I reached out, for what it's worth, I reached out to a couple people I know who said that they don't believe that the Cubs have told Ben Zobrist to stay home. They think that it is, like the Cubs have said, it's something with Zobrist, and that you know, nobody has told me directly that the Cubs are looking to trade him, but they said if they are looking to trade him, that it's probably just a coincidence that he's at home. So take that for what it is. I think Evan is a credible human being and a credible baseball person and has credible sources. So I'm not dumping on that at all. I'm just putting out there what I've heard as well as what he's heard. And you can kind of make your own judgments based on that. But I think the big takeaway for me is that there is a probably greater than zero chance that the Cubs are both looking to make a kind of surprising trade here at the beginning of spring training, and then, you know, a surprising free agent signing, considering that, according to billionaire Tom Ricketts, the Cubs don't have any money.
Yeah. what a bunch of baloney. like, come on. Are you kidding me? Whatever. I mean, what a dumb reason. I know, I get what the theory is working behind this or whatnot, just to kind of address the Craig Kimbrel stuff. Obviously, I'm game for Craig Kimbrel. That sounds great. I don't know if getting rid of Zobrist necessarily is worth the addition you get in Craig Kimbrel. And you kind of mentioned it before we got started. Like, that's a pretty crowded bullpen as is. Like, you've got to find a way to fit Tyler Chatwood in there. You've got now Brandon Morrow, who's not going to be the closer off right, what his role might be. Pedro Strop is likely going to be the closer with Steve Cishek. And, you know, I guess CJ Edwards is kind of going to be kind of defined as we go on through the season. But Craig Kimbrel coming there obviously gives you that closer option. But now you've got a bunch of pieces that, you know, you're jumbling your whole bullpen and kind of in some ways hurting your offense a little bit, right?
Yeah, and I don't see how you go into next year, or I guess this year. It's already 2019. I don't see how you go into 2019 baseball season with the same offense as last year, minus Ben Zobrist and Tommy La Stella, but plus you know, Daniel Descalzo. I don't know how you do that and say that you've improved, even if you're adding Craig Kimbrel to this bullpen, which I think would be a great addition. And, you know, it is a crowded pen. You have a whole lot of options, and I think that's good. I think that's what has made, you know, taking the bullpen from something that I thought was their biggest weakness or the most shaky thing about the 2019 team in just a matter of weeks, where they signed a lot of guys who could be competing for those jobs. You have legitimately 14 guys who, you know, are maybe even more than that, looking to fill out essentially 8 spots.
Right.
And yeah, I think that what you're doing with the bullpen right now, you could probably find 7 guys plus Tyler Chatwood to fill out a bullpen and feel relatively good about it while you wait for Morrow to get back. I think Kimbrel improves that if that is indeed what they're doing or trying to do. But I don't think that subtracting Ben Zobrist makes a lot of sense for that. Now, at the same time, this is like when I was texting with somebody, I was like, this is kind of an NBA thing. This is more of an NBA move than it is a Major League Baseball move. And that's what makes it disappointing, because the NBA has the salary cap where you have to operate in a certain way. In baseball, you don't have a salary cap. You just have the luxury tax that you can go beyond. And the Cubs aren't really that close to the next luxury tax level right now. So it just seems, it would be odd to say we have to move the 1 year of whatever it is, $14 million or whatever for Ben Zobrist, 1 year of him we need to move off the roster so that we could add in a guy like Craig Kimbrel on a multi-year deal. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't. It zero sense in my mind, honestly. Like, I just don't get this. I mean, Craig Kimbrel, obviously a huge upgrade, but to get rid of Ben Zobrist for, yeah, you were right, $14 million for this 1 year, I get that's a chunk of change that the Cubs don't have right now, but then they go and use it against for Craig Kimbrel. I mean, it just doesn't seem like, you know, the what you're losing doesn't necessarily equal what you're gaining. And maybe it could. Maybe Craig Kimbrel makes his bullpen absolutely elite. You've got plenty of options, a ton of versatility, as well as, like, you know, just you said, like 12, 13, 14, maybe 15, 16 guys that are trying to fill out 8 spots. Like, that's great. Like, you could, you love having those options. On top of it, you have backups in case something does happen, injuries or whatnot. Brandon Morrow, obviously not going to start the season. Too hard to rely on him as anything more than, you know, wait and see. But, you know, at the same time too, you look at Ben Zobrist, about to turn 38 this year, obviously still 37. He's kind of, at this point, his versatility isn't so much of what his selling point is at this point. It's kind of weird that his roles have reversed now. He's always been a good hitter, but now his best asset is that he's such a good contact hitter. For a Cubs team that seems to swing and miss a lot or not necessarily get a whole lot of the ball as they did last year, having someone like Ben Zobrist, he's still the guy I want up to bat when you need a base hit, you need a ball in play, and you've got a guy in scoring position. Ben Zobrist is still that guy in my mind. There's no one else on this team right now that I'm really looking at. Like, you know, I'm super confident in him. Maybe Chris Bryant if he's healthy. But beyond that, you've got a lot of boom or bust guys on this roster, in this lineup. So losing Ben Zobrist is a huge chunk and a huge blow in my mind. Like you were talking about before the show, it's hard to come to the fans and be like, hey, you know, we think we're better on offense, but we got rid of Ben Zobrist and Tommy La Stella, by the way, our two best contact hitters, but we have Daniel Descalso and he can play everywhere. What does that make you how does that make you feel?
Yeah, no, that's just it doesn't resonate with me as getting better on offense. And again, it's a difficult position to be in if this is indeed what they're trying to do right now. Because on one hand, yeah, Craig Kimbrel does make a bullpen that could be good into a bullpen that could be great. And so that's something you do if you can, especially because I do at the same time have a belief that the offense in general will bounce back. But yeah, Zobrist, it's not a coincidence that 2015 offense that was somewhat spotty and somewhat inconsistent and struck out a lot. It's not a coincidence that offense turned into a really elite offense for 2.5 seasons once you added Ben Zobrist to the lineup and a few other players, obviously, as well. But Zobrist made such a huge difference in that 2016 team, batting essentially in that fourth or fifth spot.
Right.
That was such a major change and moved things forward in a positive way. I don't see that guy unless they really believe they have some positive change from guys like Ian Happ and Kyle Schwarber and Wilson Contreras. If those guys have taken a major step forward as offensive players, then I think, you know, maybe you can get away with dumping Ben Zobrist so that you can sign a great reliever. But, you know, until I know that, it's hard for me. You know, like you said, he's the guy that you trust, you know, with a runner on third and one out in the ninth inning down by one. That's the guy you trust is actually going to get the job done. Is there really anybody else that you feel like definitely is getting that run home? I don't really think there is.
Jason Hayward.
Ugh.
Just kidding. Javier Baez. Even worse. whatever. To touch on what you were saying before about Tom Ricketts, the quote was, he was obviously asked why they weren't necessarily going after high-profile players at this point this offseason, even though when the press conference came out after they got bounced from the Rockies and the wild card, Theo Epstein was like, this is, you know, implied essentially the Cubs were going to go out and fix the issue. And a few months later, the tone had changed. Like, well, we're happy with our guys. They just need to get better. And obviously a total flip-flop, but what Ricketts said addressing this question today was, Tom Ricketts, that is, that's a pretty easy question to answer. We don't have any more in regards to money, Ricketts said. We've been in the top five in spending in baseball the last 5 or 6 years. We were in the top couple last year. We've put our money back on the field, and unfortunately, you can't have a high-profile free agent every single year. Part of that is how much it costs, the $25 to $30 million it's going to cost, plus it's a 10-year investment. You got to pay these dollars. We have a team, we have made the best, and that we have over the last 4 years. I think we're well positioned to win this division, but essentially he's saying long-term wise, they have to worry about the guys that are on this roster. They can't commit 10 years to this guy and that much chunk of money. Like, realistic, but also no, it's not. Like, you obviously could just pay the luxury tax. There's money there. You know, it's not like you checked your wallet and you're like, oh, I guess it's gone. I don't know. I guess we don't buy things now. This is really tough. Like, this reminds me of the Office scene when Michael says he's going to have a big surprise and he tries to appease everyone with ice cream sandwiches and then does a fake drum roll for like 7 minutes and then the episode ends. That's literally, I feel like, how this press conference was going for Tom Ricketts today.
I don't recall that Office episode. I don't know if you just made that up, but I really want to see that.
Oh, it's good. It's great.
A 7-minute drum roll and then the episode ends. That's kind of how the Cubs like off season. that's their off season in a nutshell. Yeah, it's just the Cubs doing a 7-minute drum roll and then spring training starts.
Yeah, and of course Ryan Dempster is narrating the whole thing. But
God, oh my God, I have so many great Cubs related TV shows that I want to write pilots for their new network.
Well, hey, yeah, I mean, they're going to need content, man, and we're just obviously a content machine over here, so.
Right. I'm going to go to them and be like, I have so many pitches that don't involve Ryan Dempster. You're going to love this.
And you're just a saint for doing that. But what were you saying before we got derailed by our stupid art?
I don't even know, man. It's not like a total secret. I've had a conversation with Tom Ricketts.
Right.
A lot of that was off the record that I can't get into. But what I can tell you is that I don't think he fully grasps the difference between how he views the Cubs spending money and how fans view the Cubs spending money.
Right.
For better or for worse, fans view the Ricketts family and their money as Cubs money and vice versa. Whereas when the Ricketts family bought the Cubs, you know, all the money that gets funneled into the team from their point of view is just dollars earned by the Cubs. It's their asset, and it's a separate thing from, let's say, TD Ameritrade and any other stuff that the Ricketts family have their hands in, right?
Right, right.
So when they say they don't have money, what they're saying is, whether you believe them or not, we take all of the profits from the Cubs and funnel it back into the Cubs, and there's only so much money that the Cubs earn. And that is why when we get to a point where we say we don't have any more money, it's that the Cubs haven't earned any more money than what we've put into the team. And again, you can believe that or not. I don't necessarily buy that every single dollar has been accounted for with their payroll this year. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's where their point of view is on it. And I think there's a major disconnect between the ownership and the fans, where I think the fans, for the most part, get that when they say that they don't have any more money, it's not that they don't have money in their personal bank accounts. It's that they're looking at it that way with the Cubs. From their point of view, I don't think Tom Ricketts and the Cubs owners, I don't think they realize that fans are expecting that when they're saying go out and sign Bryce Harper, fans are saying, yes, we don't care if you have to dig into your own pockets to make that happen. Just make it happen.
Right. And obviously, that's a fan being selfish. I guess you could say the same thing about Tom Ricketts. But yeah, I mean, fans want to see. I mean, they see this ownership. They put almost, I mean, $900 million came from his father alone to cover the cost to purchase the Cubs. Obviously, they see that this family has money. This ownership group could spend it. But yeah, it's not coming necessarily from the resources that the Cubs are, you know, producing money from or whatever. It's coming from outside of that. But to a fan, you know, money is money. It doesn't matter if it gets intertangled. You know, give some of it to Bryce Harper. Also, it'd be really cool if we stopped using troughs at Wrigley Field. Like, there's still a couple. Get rid of them. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, that money does. It doesn't make sense to them that that's not necessarily paired. And obviously, you run into issues like this. But Tom Ricketts, you would think, coming from, like, always trying to put out that, like, he came as a fan. He loved Wrigley Field. He fell in love with the Cubs when he first came to Chicago. To have this mindset, it's just kind of like, oh, aren't you supposed to be like a diehard fan though? Like, don't you get this? And he's kind of like, no, what? Explain it to me. How's baseball? You know, I don't know. It's just a, like you said, a disconnect between fans and what they anticipate from what Tom Ricketts is presenting them. So,
yeah, but I also get the sense that Tom Ricketts was the fan who went to Wrigley Field and watched the games. And then, you know, when he heard that they were in on a free agent, probably was just like, well, that doesn't make good fiscal sense to sign that guy. like that's the kind of fan that Tom Ricketts probably was. Like, no, don't spend the money.
What's BABIP? Is that some type of Roth IRA? All right, that'll about do it here for the second segment. We'll finish up the show in their third and final segment as we talk a little bit about just some of the Cubs bolts here and wrap up the show here on Locked On Cubs. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs here in the third and final segment of our show. To kind of kick this third segment off, Victor Carantini posted a picture of Pedro Strop raising his hand in what looks like an all pitchers and catcher meeting. It's adorable because the angle it's shot from, it's like behind, it makes Strop look like he's like 9 years old and he's asking if he can go to the bathroom. It's a glorious picture. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on Victor Carantini's Instagram. I found it on Reddit. But just another case of Pedro Strop being awesome.
Pedro's the best.
He is. Another cool quick note here as well. Anthony Rizzo did an AMA on Reddit. For those who don't know who that is, it's just basically just a Q&A session that he does where people on Reddit post questions, and Anthony Rizzo, it was on, I think he was on the R Baseball account for about an hour. It's something that Fanatics is putting out there. If you haven't seen that, go ahead and check that out. But Chris Bryant and Javier Baez will be part of like a group of like five or six players that'll be going to talk and doing an AMA on Reddit as well. So those will be interesting as well. So if you haven't seen those, check those out. I'm excited to see how boring Chris Bryant's responses are. I don't know about you, Ryan. That sounds like
I'm excited for all the gosh darn it's and
right
dangs
fiddlesticks. Yep. And then there was something else I had. Hold on one sec. Oh, I found it. There were also pictures that surfaced of David Bode, and I did not realize how jacked David Bode is. Like, that dude is an absolute unit, like super strong. Like, I'm surprised he's so like athletic and quick as he is.
Yeah, no, that's I feel like that's like mostly a new thing for him, right?
I think, yeah, he must have added on a little bit of weight or a little bit of muscle this offseason, which doesn't surprise. I mean, isn't surprising. Obviously, he's trying to add more pop to his bat. But yeah, dude looks real filled out.
I read that he added some different sort of like lifting, like focused on arms instead of chest. I don't remember what it said, but I just remember he was asked about being jacked coming into spring training and talked about like he changed his lifting routine or something like that, which good for him.
Yeah. Teaches.
I also heard that Javier Baez looks quite a bit more muscular heading into spring training.
Good for Javi. That's not a bad thing. If he could just distinguish the difference between sliders in the dirt and sliders that are inside the zone, that'd be pretty fun.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, kudos to those guys. They had extra time in the off season to figure out workout routines.
And then one final note, Jordan Bastian, who's the new MLB reporter for the Cubs, was watching Chris Bryant. He was doing he was just in left center field, I think, patrolling for BP and robbed Elmore of a home run. He went up on the wall, literally stole it from him, came back in, and he yelled to the reporters, "Did you guys get that?" And Jordan replied, "Nope. No, we did not."
Did you see some of the delusional comments on that as well?
No, I didn't.
There were a handful of Cubs fans saying that that was another example of Chris Bryant kind of being a me guy.
Oh, my God. People are already out to get Chris Bryant, the nicest human in the world.
I know. Yep. Like, there's so many things to not like the Cubs about right now. Chris Bryant is really on kind of the good list. So, you know, enjoy that as long as you can. Eventually, if Chris Bryant outs himself for being kind of a bad guy, like someday down the road, then I can, go ahead and be disappointed with him. But until then, just enjoy the fact that he is just so kind of innocent and pure as far as baseball players go.
No, the worst thing he's ever done is taken a penny and not leave a penny. That's the only thing he's ever done that's poor.
And it still eats him up.
Yeah, nightmares. That'll about do it here on Locked On Cubs, as we are excited for spring training to actually have something to talk about other than the boring, lame jokes that Ryan and I like to make to each other to pass time. So, but thanks. Appreciate you guys tuning in. You guys can catch this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, as well as Google Play. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us there. And as well as check out the Locked On Network. Plenty of exciting things going on. A ton of NBA prospect talk right now with Zion, RJ Barrett, all sorts of shenanigons going on with that. So check out the Locked On Network podcast for your basketball, NBA, all your sports needs, really. So with that, though, thanks for listening to Locked On Cubs. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. Go Cubs!